we also are the champions. And we're back. Welcome, everybody, once again to another episode of Mike, Mike, and Oscar. We're doing that OSP dance one more time, and at least we got good music to dance to this time.
Yes.
The Oscar sprint profile of what we thought would be the Freddie Mercury biopic, and is it actually that? We'll get into that and answer that and many more questions. Bohemian Rhapsody getting Oscar sprint profile treatment. We will tell you what exactly an Oscar sprint profile is in just a minute. But first, let's say hi. I'm co-host Mike One. This is co-host also Mike.
Also Mike here. You just came out of the theater a few hours ago.
Sure.
Resettled back, and we're gonna attack this. But we, audibly, you know, we're satisfied right now.
Yes.
I mean, the audio quality of our last few hours is pretty strong for sure.
Grew out thick mustaches and are wearing white A tank tops for this recording session.
The visuals of this recording, it's down. Yes.
But that is what we were doing, Bohemian Rhapsody, Oscar Sprint Profile. If you have not joined us previously for a Mike, Mike, and Oscar Oscar Sprint Profile, what we do is we take would-be, should-be, or will-be contenders for the upcoming year's Oscars. That, of course, is going to be the 2019 Academy Awards show. And we put them through what we call the Oscar Sprint Profile, because the run-up to from Oscar seasons to nominations is what we refer to as the Oscar Sprint. We profile every movie, we run it through the ringer, our own personal brand of putting it up against the Oscar lens, the highs, the lows, the best, the worst, ins and outs, tell you whether or not you should see it. That's the first half of this review all the time. The first half is a non-spoiler half. We tell you if it's worth seeing at all. And the second half is we go in the ins and outs, the plot points, the spoilers. It's spoiler-filled, and we tell you exactly what to expect should you see it or if you have seen it. That said, this is an OSP, Oscar Sprint Profile for Bohemian Rhapsody, and also Mike gets us started, as he does, with the cast.
So usually I do cast and crew. I'm just going to talk about the cast today. We have Rami Malek starring Freddie Mercury in Bohemian Rhapsody here. One thing that was kind of cool is that we do have the Queen manager, Jim Beach, and we have some of the band members as producers in the film, as you're going to mention in your specs.
Yes.
So they're behind this. They're trying to pay homage to Freddie Mercury. We wonder if that is hurting the actual plot points in the film, not giving him enough flaws, not making him dimensional. Let's look at Rami Malek's other roles. Multi-dimensional. You got drug addict, hacker extraordinaire, Elliot from Mr. Robot. He is that on USA, Rami Malek. He's been nominated for 2 Golden Globes.
It's only a matter of time before he does win the any kind of Oscar or something like that for his talents. He's outstanding.
I mean, he's been on the rise for a little bit. Short Term 12, The Master, Spike Lee's Old Boy, David Lowery's Ain't Them Body Saints.
Ain't Them Body Saints, I feel, comes up every recording now.
Well, I mean, Rami Malek works for good directors. I mean, look at this. PTA, Spike Lee, David Lowery. I mean, again and again, works for good directors.
If you're going to get those reps, you might as well get him in with the best names in Hollywood.
Absolutely. So he's done arcs on The War at Home, The Pacific, and BoJack Horseman as a voice actor. He's also scheduled to be in next year's The Voyage of Dr. Doolittle as a voice.
That much anticipated. Let's not also forget he was one of the lead characters in the PlayStation 4 horror game / basically choose-your-own-adventure movie Until Dawn, which I played a couple times.
Interesting. What kind of character does he play in that? Do you know? Do you remember?
I can't say that. It'll spoil the game.
Oh, it'll spoil the whole...
It'll spoil a good chunk of the game.
Okay.
He suffers some tragedy, let's say that.
All right, at least they give him a dimensional character in the video
He's very versatile. I would like to see that made into a movie, but I'm also a horror fan, so...
We're going to have a thing or two to say about his performance coming up. Lucy Boynton from Sing Street.
She was great.
Plays Mary Austin. Boynton is also known from Let Me Go, Apostle, and last year's Murder on the Orient Express. Ben Hardy plays Roger Taylor. He's known from his role as Angel in X-Men Apocalypse and as Wade in Only the Brave. We have Joseph Mazzello as John Deacon. Insanely, he's the little boy from Jurassic Park. The bass player. Mazzello, all grown up here. He's also been in The Social Network and G.I. Joe Retaliation, amongst other things. Mike Myers plays manager.
I didn't know he was in this.
Super suit, record guy. The stereotypical record guy. Gross beard and hair.
I think stereotypical is what you could say about a lot of parts of this movie. But yes, he was one of
Ray
them.
Ray Foster's, of course. Myers is Austin Powers, Shrek, blah, 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 blah. Wayne's World. And it's great, the Wayne's World...
Shout out, little Easter egg they give him.
Throughout that scene.
Now, see, but did he need to play this role? Like, he couldn't have just been one guy that was like a critic about the song. Teenagers will never headbang to Bohemian Rhapsody. And that could have been it. Like, that was...
Look, he's slowly getting out of his you know, I have way too much money to do anything phase. So he's was in the terminal. He hosted the Gong Show in 2017 for
he wasn't bad, and he was also wasn't ever referred to as Michael Myers.
Shocked that you know this. No, he was impersonating somebody.
He was sold as a longtime British comedian.
And he was in the terminal. He was in Terminal with Margot Robbie, or the Terminal with Tom Hanks. One of those two things. But both were bad. And he does have, for the record, Austin Powers 4 listed as announced on IMDb. I don't know if that's going to happen.
Those longtime, that's been kicked around a while, but those longtime properties, there's some hope if you believe in something that's not related, meaning something to something else, because Bad Boys 3 was announced for the longest time, and we just got a film from the set of Will Smith saying it's official with Martin Lawrence. So
but think about, like, this happens with comedians. Jerry Seinfeld goes away for 10, 15 years.
Yeah.
Larry David goes away for a while. Dave Chappelle literally hightails it over to Africa and takes a sabbatical over there. Eddie Murphy, Gene Wilder, Rick Moranis.
Well, they a lot of the stand-up comedians, especially the great ones, David Letterman was like this too, he's on record, but a lot of them are introverts. They don't really like Larry David. He hates being bothered. They don't like being around people. So they go, they get their success, their fame, that becomes too much, they go take shelter, but it's still their itch to get on stage.
Their fame, I wonder if it's also that they comedy's like a muscle that you gotta flex and you gotta work out regularly.
Itch you gotta scratch.
So the less you do it, the less you're likely to do it in a way.
You think that's what it is? I think it's the opposite. Wonder. I think the longer you stay away, the more the desire builds and you just finally burst out and come back. That's how I've always
There's
seen
it. There's a glass half empty and a glass half full to this conversation. Where do you land, folks? I don't know. I'm confused right now, just to keep continuing to talk. Gwillem Lee is Brian May. He's a regular on British TV and Jamestown, Midsummer Murders, Land Girls, and Animal Ark amongst his credits.
So you got through all the members of Queen now. I was waiting for you to be finished. What did you think of the hair?
The hair was good.
I thought so. I liked it.
I didn't have any wig problems. I wrote that down later. We'll get to that. Right. I want to talk more about that. Mm-hmm. But we have a few more cast members that are well-known.
Yes.
Littlefinger himself, Aidan Gillen from Game of Thrones and The Wire.
Not playing an asshole this time.
Tom Branson from Downton Abbey has a huge part in this movie. Alan Leach is the actor. We have Veep, Gosford Park, In the Loops, Weasley Politician, or son-in-law extraordinaire Tom Hollander. And Jess Radomska, Aaron McCuster, Max Bennett, Ace Bati, Michelle Duncan, and Charlotte Charland round out the cast or the primary cast.
Solid cast. Very solid cast.
All right, so let's get this out of the way now. We got story inception, production notes, backstory. Technically, Bohemian Rhapsody was directed by Bryan Singer.
Well, not technically, officially.
Officially. He's directed The Usual Suspects, X-Men's 1, 2, Days of Future Past, Apocalypse, plus Apt Pupil, Valkyrie, and Jack the Giant Slayer. He's had a career that's been basically a successful career as a producer and a director.
Before we dive into what we think about what happened or what did happen, Bryan Singer's career taken from 3,000 feet. Are you a fan just of his filmography?
To me, he's hit and miss. I mean, I like The Usual Suspects. X-Men's 1 and 2, I'm not a huge fan of. I like Days of Future Past. Apocalypse, I'm not a fan of. And then Apt Pupil, Valkyrie, Jack the Giant Slayer was crap.
So you don't give him credit
for... I don't like Apt Pupil or Valkyrie that much.
You don't see him as the man that kind of authored the renaissance of the superhero movie? X-Men 1 at the time was considered kind of revolutionary. I'm just playing devil's advocate.
Sam Raimi's. I mean, he got box office for sure.
I share your sentiments.
I didn't like X-Men 1. I didn't like
You didn't like it at the time?
X-Men 2. The stories bothered me.
X-2 was rough. X-2 was
rough
for me.
Both of them, they bothered me. Right. I like Logan's performance in that. Hugh Jackman. I liked him. But I know. I that was me. I'm just being honest with you folks. I always said I would be.
Yeah. We view it similarly. So why is he not technically the director to
this? So we reviewed this in our very first Hollywood Hot Takes episode. We reported on the fact that Bryan Singer was fired from the production of Bohemian Rhapsody for not showing up after Thanksgiving break. Yeah, he had been clashing with star Rami Malek and crew members throughout the production. The report basically said that Singer claimed a personal health reason for his continual late arrivals. So he was arriving late on set, Tommy Wiseau style. And then he doesn't show up after holiday break.
And if memory serves me right from our first Hot Takes episode, I think at the time he didn't have an exploit. He wasn't telling anyone he wasn't showing up. They just didn't know where he was.
Yeah, it's something like that. Yeah. I didn't dig deep enough here. But yeah, go back to our old episodes if you want to know the fuller story. But basically, the news cycle of the Time's Up movement also brought up his past. Yikes. And we're going to get into that in a minute.
Mm-hmm.
And also a new allegation. So we have a couple different things here. So it's a problem.
Yeah.
Dexter Fletcher took over as director with 2 weeks to go in the production. Who is Dexter Fletcher? Well, for one, he's had a career as an actor in a bunch of Guy Ritchie movies, including Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels. He's been on HBO's Band of Brothers, amongst many other credits. He's a very recognizable face. He's also directed 3 films, including the 2016 biopic Eddie the Eagle with Hugh Jackman and Taron Egerton. Edgerton, I don't know how to pronounce that, but he's a athletic skier Kingsman dude.
Nailed anyway. It. That's the technical term for what that profession is.
That was like take 17. I was trying to come up with something to say about Taron Egerton or Edgerton.
I like how you just keep diving back into the name that you can't say.
If a joke dies, I want to kick that back dead to it horse. And
just beat it. Yeah, I got gotcha. You.
And yeah, let's see if something else plays. If we squeak out a laugh somewhere else down the line.
Well, it's making me giggle, so you not, did well.
Then, moving on. The Directors Guild of America ruled that Fletcher was to be prohibited from getting a directorial credit for replacing Singer at the end of production and then taking it through post. So, I mean, basically, he was probably like 35% of the time the director, but...
I wonder what the post-credit, the explanation, the DVD, Blu-ray extras, when you usually have the director sit down and give his his spec. I wonder if that's going to happen on this at all. Two, I would also love, if it does happen, for them to break down what was a Dexter Fletcher scene and what was, I mean, there's some Bryan Singer staples that you can pick out.
Yeah, now Fletcher was also an executive producer on the property the whole time.
Right.
I don't know if he had another role in the crew, but he definitely was involved the whole time, sure. So maybe he could handle something like that, but we'll see. Many pundits said the whole controversy would eventually hold this movie back from Oscar consideration. I don't think that's quite happening. I think Rami Malek's still getting a hard push here, but it's definitely a problem when you look at these reverberations with the Time's Up movement and then the new allegation here. So plain and simple, Singer's name, to me, seems to be the problem with this. You can talk about any other movie, Mike, where a director leaves for personal reasons, for health reasons, for it's not a good look necessarily, but you're not going to say, you're not going to damn the movie for a director who has a health issue.
Yeah, I'm on record as saying I think audiences are more willing to kind of separate the two if it's a director that's not involved, not on screen anyway, like say if it was a Kevin Spacey or James Franco or something like that. I do think, however, that it might be a tiebreaker because we've seen just, and we'll get into the reviews, this movie's very polarizing. So I could absolutely see some people saying, well, I can't reward this or get over the hump with it because it's a Bryan Singer thing and he's such an awful person. So I could see definitely that happening, which would be unfortunate for Rami Malek, but you can't say it's not understandable either.
Now, I'm going to just outline Singer's allegations here. You can go online and read about them, but there are 3 primary issues and 3 separate cases made against him. The first was withdrawn, the second was dismissed from court, and the third came out in 2017, like I said, during the Time's Up movement, and I still think is in somewhat of a flux. I don't know what it is,
where
it is
now,
honestly. But here's the thing, Mike. Singer is attached to Broadway 4D, which comes out next year. He's been announced as the director of World War III and Red Sonja. He's also working as a producer on 2 upcoming
projects. The Red Sonja one is kind of the big turd in the punch bowl right now, and it caused a lot of backlash online because that was just announced recently.
Yeah.
And it's getting, I think it's kind of getting a hot shot push, too, to get through production. So a lot of people were taken aback by their willingness to tab him for that project.
Now, something that I read about, which really threw me, was American Psycho novelist, writer Bret Easton Ellis, I think he's also been a screenwriter, but he commented in a documentary about child sexual abuse in Hollywood called An Open Secret. Easton Ellis alleges that 2 of his former partners had attended underage sex parties hosted by Singer and director Roland Emmerich.
She's not the only one. I've seen that in a couple places. I've seen it pop up and reading some reviews. the quote-unquote twinks he would have at his party, and this whole brigade of people for young sex. It's gross, it's disgusting, and it's extremely worrisome.
And that documentary,
the fact that it was a known secret is a big problem, and again shows you why these movements are so necessary.
And that documentary predates the Time's Up movement back from 2014. So this is a loaded issue. It's a host of serious allegations that people just won't drop after all these years. It keeps coming up. I wonder if it will sink the project at the end of the day. I don't think it will. I wonder, but here's what disturbs me a little bit. Like, we can't just give Hollywood the credit or the studios the credit that they've done their research, can we? Like, all right, you're hiring Bryan Singer. That must mean he's in the clear. You did your research.
Oh, absolutely.
Of course. We don't live in a world like that anymore.
It's money. It's sad. It's sick and disturbing. But it's can Bryan Singer turn this into a profitable franchise? Yes. Well, then here you go. And it sucks.
Nothing's proven. He's innocent until he's proven guilty, right? I mean, the court of public opinion has not. They have not had him cross the line yet.
You know, you hate to compare it to real life and the polarizing field that is politics, but it's no different than the people that say you got to believe women, you got to believe victims, but at the same time are willing to put a guy on the U.S. Supreme Court that has all these allegations of sexual assault against him. It's just double talk. They think lip service is enough to placate this movement, and it's not. And God bless the people that are holding them to the fire, holding their feet to the fire, and wanting accountability for them. So we'll see what happens in the fallout. I can't imagine this is the last of it. I think we're going to hear more. So.
And the truth is, we don't know.
Of course not.
What's at the bottom of this? How could we? So we just tried to present it, and we'll move on here. So the film was announced in 2010. Queen guitarist Brian May broke the news. Sacha Baron Cohen, Borat himself, was attached to play Freddie Mercury. Peter Morgan of The Queen and Frost Nixon was attached to write the screenplay.
I'm kind of sad we'll never get that movie.
True. SBC, Sacha Baron Cohen, left the project in 2013. They said it was because he was well too known as a prankster presence in Ali G and Borat. To me, this just seems like it didn't work out. And let's be honest, it was rumored that those scripts with Sacha Baron Cohen had Freddie dying in the middle of the movie.
That was a rumored issue. Yeah, there was a rumored issue between the rest of the band and Baron Cohen that they wanted the Queen movie, the Queen band movie, and Sacha Baron Cohen obviously wanted the Freddie Mercury biopic, and there was a clash. There's been water doused on that flame. If you read certain reviews, I don't know what the truth is, but again, bottom line is Sacha Baron Cohen's out, Rami Malek's in,
and we believe it too because this script seems like too
much awfully cook. Kind to the band members of.
But true, it also seems like too many cooks in the kitchen, though. Yeah. It seems like a compromised script.
With no bad guys.
Darkest Hour screenwriter Anthony McCartan takes over. Dexter Fletcher was attached as the director at this point. Mm-hmm. Then in 2015, McCartan moves forward as the screenwriter. He now has a title called Bohemian Rhapsody. They also decide upon Bryan Singer as a director, bumping Fletcher into the role as executive producer. So in 2017, principal photography begins in September over in London. They made an exact replica, Michael, of the Live Aid set at Wembley Stadium. This did not, obviously they used computer generation, they used green screen in the background, but they did have the actual set remade, which is whatever, a couple hundred feet worth of set, and probably a certain amount of fans there. But they shot all these scenes at the Bovingdon Airfield near Hemel Hempstead in England.
Yeah, you had a Polish guy using all the Italian names. Now we got an Italian guy using all the English
names.
It could
be Bovingdon. I could be totally botching.
Linguistics isn't our strong suit.
No.
We're trying to present facts here.
What was interesting to me, and this is fascinating, Queen archivist Greg Brooks, he had covered the band for many years. He was on set and aiding his expertise to the writers, the directors, trying to help them stage everything.
Sure.
How the things happened in real life. Now, we've seen a lot of biopics in our day, and we've seen a lot of things stray from real life to dramatize the story.
This one.
For a movie.
All you have to do is look up the history and see that this one also does that in certain ways.
Right, but I wonder if they didn't dramatize it enough here, Michael, because there's a lot of scenes, and Ryan L. Terry, our friend over at RL Terry Real View, he quoted Alfred Hitchcock this morning to me in some Twitter direct messaging. He said a maxim that Hitch always said was begin a scene as late as possible. But this scene, you know, this movie begins scenes kind of early on, and they set it up, and they're too fat, and they're, you know, read Ryan's opinion on his on RL Terry Realview there.
Yeah, very well written piece per usual by Ryan.
Yeah, I wonder if they're holding the audience's hand a little too much. They're trying to make it seem too authentic. It's an homage to authenticity because you got the Queen band members and the managers and the archivists on set as producers, and you're not sticking to some screenwriting fundamentals, and then to make it all work, you're over the top with other fundamentals.
And if you're going to lie or twist the truth, let's say, you twist it in some very consequential ways that could impact people that used Freddie Mercury as a conduit for faith and belief. Sure. We'll get into all of it, but it's we'll save it for the spoiler section.
See, yes, we'll have some more on that later. As for the performances carried out through this movie, Malick did sing some performances in the film, but they were audibly enhanced as best as I can figure, you know, as an audience member, but also from what I read, by Freddie Mercury's voice and the voice of Mark Martell, who is a well-known Queen cover band lead singer. Queen sing-alike.
How about that for
extraordinaire?
Like the chance of a lifetime. Hey, we're doing Freddie Mercury's biopic, and we think you sound closest to him.
Yeah, apparently he won the Queen Extravaganza Live Auditions, which was a thing at one point in the world.
Why didn't we enter those?
The planet Earth, and this man won it, Mark Martell. But you can go online at YouTube and just look up Mark Martell, M-A-R-C. Find him everywhere singing Queen songs.
Sure.
So that is a long profile, but it's a loaded one today, so I figured we'd go at it.
Yeah, it's a sordid backstory, and I think that kind of played into what we saw on screen. As we get into it, here are some specs for Bohemian Rhapsody. Screenplay and story by credits go to Anthony McCartan. Peter Morgan also gets a story by credit, and Brian Singer gets the lone directorial credit, although he was replaced by Dexter Fletcher. Mike told you all of this already. October 23rd at the SSE Arena in London was its world debut, and that happened a night before its London premiere. On October 24th, it came stateside here a week later on November 2nd, which is when we are recording this, having just seen it on technically what is its national opening night. 134-minute runtime on a PG-13 rating. Producers listed are Graham King and Jim Beach, although, like also Mike told you, the other members of Queen did also get executive producer credits, as was needed probably to get the soundtrack of all Queen's library, including this movie.
They played the hits.
They sure do. Jim Beach himself, the longtime manager of the band Queen, as it is. 20th Century Fox, New Regency, GK Films and Queen Films are the production companies, while 20th Century Fox also gets distribution rights. There's actually a reported budget, or at least an estimated budget given by Variety, believed to be in the $50 to $55 million range, and based on the box office, which I'll touch on, that's pretty good news for everyone involved.
Yes.
Deadline reported that the film made a $3.9 million in its Thursday preview showings, that was the November 1st date, and is expected to make another $17 to $18 million on showings today, November 2nd, its U.S. debut date. It sets it up for a projected $43 to $45 million opening weekend, which would likely place it in the top 15 as far as 2018 domestic box office debuts go. Commercial success seems to be a lock, as no movie has gotten the $40 million opening weekend mark or above this year, and has gone on to gross less than the $117 million domestic box office that The Nun has raked in. So if you hit that $40 million mark, you're pretty much assured at least $120 million domestically in the U.S.
Which is good number for this movie.
If you're talking a $55 million production budget, I think that puts it in the black already alone. The commercial success is one thing. Would it find the same consistency amongst critics? In short, nah.
It's a little mixed.
Reviews from this were all over the place from the jump, at least from what I've saw. There's been outright complimentary, quote, "Wow, Bohemian Rhapsody movie is by far my favorite movie of the year so far, and it's Rami Malek is a shoo-in for best actor, and I don't know who touches him right now. He was absolutely mesmerizing as the great Freddie Mercury." That comes from Christian Harloff of Schmoes Knows Reviews and Collider.com.
He's a name I know.
Sure, there's the "Rami is great, but the movie lacks. Quote, Bohemian Rhapsody will probably hold the distinction of being the worst film of the year to contain the best performance. Rami Malek is an absolute marvel as the sensational Freddie Mercury, but this lackluster biopic screenplay fails to break tradition like its subject. That from Matt Neglia of At Next Best Picture, our friend over there.
Yeah, I can agree with
that. Then there's the outright negative all around. Quote, Bohemian Rhapsody is now in theaters, a movie as dull and generic as Freddie Mercury was, electric and one of a kind. Save your money, save your time, and oh, by the way, save your world and vote for Democrats. That's from David Ehrlich at IndieWire over there. So those are three names that are substantial in film Twitter that we reference often, that we respect their opinions of and are all over the place. So there's a kind of a mixed bag here. So this is my way of saying opinions are mixed. 8.4 IMDb score and 17,000 plus reviews. That is incredibly freaking high.
Right, as an audience number right now.
A high score is nothing unusual, but for so many votes, touching an 8.5 almost, it's a rarity, especially when taken in conjunction with the other sites and scores, such as the 59% Rotten Tomatoes score on 224 critical reviews, only 133 of those being positive, almost 100 being negative, average critical score of 6 out of 10, a 48 Metascore on 43 critic reviews. But again, the audience score on Rotten Tomato has it at a 93 on 4,100 plus reviews.
Ludicrous disparity.
Unbelievable. Average audience score 4.6 out of 5 on Rotten Tomato. So this is all our way of saying, we don't know.
Audiences like it right now in terms of the preview. So the fans who are Queen fans, who are Freddie Mercury fans, who are going out on a Thursday night or going out on a preview or getting previewed a couple weeks before in a test audience, they love this movie.
Yeah, if you're going for the music, you're going to love it.
Yeah.
I think, right? I mean, there's a lot of Queen music that's really well placed and well done, and you get a lot of it.
So in terms of your expectations, Mike, because this is the fascinating factor that I think will distinguish our reviews today, because this movie's been mixed for weeks. We've been reporting on it here and there, like, it's stock up, stock down. Oh, Rami Malek's actually going to contend for an Oscar. Stock up. This movie's going to be great. We got to go see it. We got to do a three-pod arc on it. Blah, blah, blah. then we have to, you know, look at the critics again. And it's coming down. And then I've just been on a roller coaster of emotions.
Well, you're not alone. Clearly, everyone else is too. There's strong opinions on either side.
Bryan Singer might be a scumbag, but these trailers are freaking great. I don't know what to think.
Well, the trailers, I've said all along, and I continue to say, are fool's gold. It didn't matter what was in this actual on screen. We were going to see it because of the trailers. Because the trailers, all you wanted was them to showcase Queen songs.
Right.
And that's what it did. And you had a guy that kind of looked like he could pull off a decent Freddie Mercury performance.
So, now that being said, if you go into the movie hoping they'll play the hits and hoping he seems authentic.
I was here for the Freddie Mercury performance. I thought this was the Freddie Mercury biopic, and how juicy is that personal backstory if you knew anything about the man personally, and how what the inherent drama that he went through already, having to do with his personal life, his health, his love life, etc. I was expecting more of that than I think we got is probably where I would land on it.
Yeah, in terms of characterization, dramatization, this movie doesn't necessarily work in a sequence of dilemmas or in a sequence of conflicts that build in a proper way. It's like he unravels a little bit, and then he has to make a decision at the end. So it's not like we get the narrative just doesn't flow. It's almost like episodic in the sense
it's one of the things I was saving for spoilers.
This is that phase.
The through line is a mess.
The through line is a major problem. Now, if you love the music, and if you don't mind the fact that they're playing the hits while you're not getting a great movie, like to me, I like these stories even when they're bad. And I've said this multiple times. I will watch a bad music documentary. I will watch every musical biopic just about.
Right.
I mean, we just recorded musicians and movies. We're going to cover all the music biopics next week for you.
Right.
We're going to have top fives galore in terms of performances after this. We recorded it before the Rami Malek's burst onto the scene with this one. To me, I like these movies even when they're bad because I like stories about bands. I like stories about performances. It's catnip to me.
But weren't you expecting more?
No.
So you just wanted the songs.
I loved listening to these songs in a movie's surround sound. I mean, that was delivering goods for me.
So like, you wanted to go to a Queen concert?
I wanted to go to a Queen concert. Yeah.
Okay. All right. I think the audience scores reflect similar values.
Right.
I don't think people are. I think people are willing to forgive the shortcomings of a plot and a through line here, which there are, and we will cover.
I mean, we paid $10 to go to a Queen's concert.
Yeah, I think that's where people land.
It's not the worst
thing
in the world.
So, no, it's not the worst thing in the world.
Great impersonation.
It's not a god awful movie by any extent. I saw people giving it 30s and 20s on Metacritic. It's not a 30 or a 20.
Now, I said to you before the movie, and it's almost like I play head games with myself, Michael.
No, you don't seem the type at all.
Yeah, after that 17-minute ramble. I wonder if I'm the type of guy who, after you get mixed reviews, but it's a movie that underachieves,
mm-hmm.
right? And we think it could be great, and then it underachieves and it's only okay. I typically hate that movie. I get very angry with that movie. And that is exactly what we get here.
And you're not angry with
it. I'm not angry with it.
I thought this would be hard to screw up.
So weird.
I really thought the Freddie Mercury biopic would be tough to screw up. And it's tough to screw up when it's not the Freddie Mercury biopic. That's an easy way to screw up
So
it's playing with my expectations too. So I'm probably more of the one more upset by what we saw, I guess would be the word.
Right.
So that's where we kind of land on it. Now, that said, let's talk about the Oscar lens. There's one glaring category for this.
Now, I was agreeing with you there,
yep.
and we're going to have big numbers for that category, but I was shocked to see other categories
mm-hmm.
being mentioned. The first and craziest of them is Best Picture, Michael.
No.
Five
no.
out of 26 experts on Gold Derby.
Those five people are wrong.
have it in their top tens, and it's 29th on Award Circuit. So Award Circuit's not as high on it right now.
You could talk me into a top 20 movie of the year so far.
Mm-hmm.
Top nah. 10 even right yeah, now
it's
tough.
It's not even close
yeah.
to my top 20 movies of the year. So,
you don't think so?
I liked it a little
right.
more.
There you go. Then.
Not even close.
Yeah.
I've seen 180 movies this year. Best Actor is a lot of the reason why here. 18 out of 26 experts on Gold Derby with two number one rankings. And Rami Malek is fifth on Award Circuit right now.
This is the category it has a chance in. I mean, this is, I having seen this, will be surprised if Malik doesn't at least get a nominee. I think a Golden Globe nom is a shoo-in.
Mm-hmm.
I will be surprised if he's not there come Oscar time. Christian Bale, Bradley Cooper, there's some big ones out there. But
does this foreshadow the experience we're going to get with Christian Bale? Are we going to get a mixed reviewed Vice and then have Christian Bale in a performance with a very good performance with a phenomenal impression? Involved in that?
Here's the only thing I'll say.
What's
about
your prediction?
That.
You're good at the prediction game.
I can point to you and say this is a Bryan Singer movie that fell flat. This is a Bryan Singer movie that fell flat. I don't think I can go to Adam McKay's filmography recently and say this movie disappointed.
Succession, Big Short. Yeah, he's been,
you know, he's been kind of on the money.
Movies.
So,
but here's what I worry about. Like, it's not done. Are they I don't know if it's done or not, but it's not being seen by enough people yet. Like, if it was so great, if it was such an Oscar shoo-in,
it's got the downsizing effect of last year. Yeah, you could be right. I mean, it might be a disappointment, who knows, but at this maybe they wanted a long time in post. Maybe they wanted in the Academy, they wanted to be past
scheduling
everything.
Could have it be a factor, yeah. And maybe that's it. But and maybe I should be an Oscar critic and do my homework, so I don't know. Award Circuit has Bohemian Rhapsody 34th in production design,
okay.
31st in cinematography, 22nd costume design.
That's a little surprising.
30th sound editing, and then 7th sound mixing. So we'll talk about these as we go into production values here, Mike. 7th sound mixing, I guess, is where we can start. We're going to go sound to sight today because I think audibly...
Sounds awesome. It
this
sounds
movie
great.
Sounded great.
Yeah.
I was humming and singing
of course.
Ever
tapping
since
your toe
I got out
and
of there.
All that shit. Yeah.
I've been singing
Queen songs ever since I got home.
And basically, the way I'm interpreting sound mixing and sound editing is sound special effects. That's what I'm going to call it that from now on. Again, I've researched this 20 times. I still get them confused. I think it's almost like economics where it's like the reverse meaning is actually...
It was my worst grade in college, so you're not talking
reasoning.
To a master here. We got to get your brother in here.
We're also broke. And I think that in terms of mixing, they're basically coming up with sounds.
Yes, that's how I've agreed it in my mind.
Those in. So basically, when they weave in Rami Malek's voice with Freddie's, when they weave in Mark Martel's voice with Rami Malek's voice with Freddie's, that's what you get, and you get a sound mix.
And for the amount of close-ups, good job, proud of you.
Am I going to be rich now? I understand economics?
For the amount of close-ups they went to for this. There are times Rami Malek looks like he's just straight up lip syncing, but they do a decent enough job to make you believe that the voice that you hear is coming out of Rami Malek's performance, and it's actually him singing live. It's not as well done as Bradley Cooper's, I don't think. That's what I would say.
There's something to be said for Bradley Cooper
going
to Bonnaroo or wherever the freak he was.
And the look is totally playing. Different too, sure.
Yeah, and that's visual effects. We'll get there in a second. But, they're playing Queen songs. That volume, even in your podunk theater, and we're in the good theater of that complex.
The good podunk.
I want to come up with a nickname, coin it like George W. here. I can't do it. The go dunk. I can't. I suck. The number one dunk. Oh, that's even worse.
Yeah, that's bad.
So basically, as an audio experience, this was phenomenal, as good as I've had in a little while.
I agree. I totally agree. Anything that's the sound stuff and the costuming to me, I think, if you want to talk about undercard awards, I'm surprised you said 30th for sound editing. That kind of surprised me. Even 7th for sound mixing right now. That's what more do you, these people took 3 different voices and had to blend them all together to make it sound like one coherent voice sung by one guy on screen. And they did a wonderful job. Probably better than any of us could have expected them to.
Right.
So, because nobody's duplicating Freddie Mercury's voice.
We've seen this done so much worse.
Oh, without question.
That's the thing. Especially when the camera is this precise and the picture is this clear, as we're going to get into visuals. So if you are off by a half a tick, whatever that unit of measurement is, and sound.
And he even gets down the extra, like when he says a big note, he goes, he's like got all those extra notes at the end. It's,
if you're a hair off, it's going to look so bad. Now, that being said, there's a few, I don't want to say awkward visuals where he's singing, and it's an extreme close-up of Rami Malek singing, and I'm a little awkward.
Sure.
I feel a little
bit
awkward.
And that's one of my criticisms, is that way too many close-up shots.
For the most part, visually,
but it looks great.
They sync the audio with
and it sounds Rami wonderful.
Malek. Yep. I'm not necessarily feeling like it's totally. I know it's dubbed, but it's there's an illusion.
You're willing to suspend your disbelief, and the going into sight as well. This couldn't have picked a worse year to come out for this, because, like you said, having to compare it to that big set like the Bonnaroo or the festival in A Star Is Born, where they're actually there shooting a real crowd, and it's so easily seeing the green screen of this one in Live Aid.
I had a problem with it.
It suffers. It does
suffer. That being said, it would have been friggin' impossible to shoot the way they shot that music video style, with psycho shower scene level of cuts to that sequence at the end at the Live Aid. They would never have been able to do it with 17,000 cameramen.
So you're comparing value at that point, right? Yeah. Like, is what they did in that scene, which is a scene we're obviously going to talk about in spoilers. Was that enough of a payoff for the shots where you're looking from behind the stage to the band waving to the crowd that clearly isn't there?
Yeah. And
clearly is not there.
It's silly. It's silly looking at times. I wonder if an IMAX, maybe it's, I don't know if it will look a little better
but
or not.
Now,
I don't care, because it's a good scene.
Well, I was going to say, other sites, they get totally right. Rami Malek's costumes, spot on for Freddie Mercury throughout this. I'm surprised costume design is that low. I really think the Brian May looked like Brian May. Yep. The band looked like
the band.
There's
not a bad wig.
No, there's really not. Especially for how absurd the hair is and was at the
time. Mike Myers could have easily been my pet peeve of the year.
Right.
But he looks good.
Right.
I will be totally honest with you. Michael won. I did not realize that was Mike Myers.
In the trailer?
When I first seen him in the movie.
And I'm terrible with faces. You're great with faces.
I'm good at faces.
Oh, you didn't know in the movie, you mean?
It took me the second time I saw him in the movie. Not the second scene.
Right, right,
right. The second
cut.
to realize it was him. Right. So the makeup literally fooled me.
Wow.
And I was waiting for Mike Myers.
You are great with faces. I'm terrible.
I still have 20/20 vision. I'm still good with that. Yeah. I still have the trained eye, but all this will change.
Where am I?
So the visuals, though, very strong. The production value is very high for this
Which
movie.
Makes me question why they even had to have that shot. Mm-hmm. Why have the, if it, you know, you've in a movie you've had to have been aces on, mm-hmm. like you have such a small degree of mistake, right? Yeah. Something so slight can go wrong audibly, structurally, with sight. And yet you've pretty much knocked it out of the park for all intents and purposes up to the, we'll call it the ending.
Mm-hmm.
And then you go to that shot.
"Quote unquote."
Well,
ending,
I don't want to refer to it as what you know, yeah. but at this the shot at that to end that scene. It's yeah. like, why? It just looks so bad.
Yeah, I'm with you. So that's a little. It was disappointing.
Yes,
was disappointing. Because maybe that's in comparison to the rest of the production value.
Certainly in comparison to A Star Is Born, which is the easiest comparison to make.
Yes, sir. So I wonder, Michael, if we should take the rest of our script thoughts here and non-spoilers, kick them to spoilers.
I do think so.
I think we've already teased you enough on the script. We think it's very hit and miss at times. I will say this as a one positive. Again, this movie delivers goods, is my final thought.
It does.
Audible goods.
Yep.
I actually laughed a half a dozen to ten times during the screenplay.
So this is a watch for you.
Anthony McCartney. Yeah, I had bottom of the barrel, low expectations for this, talking to Ryan L. Terry this morning. And I just always take things negatively. I'm just a mope. So he was like, it's not the best movie ever. So I'm like, no. I've liked Queen, the band, my whole life. It's not great. Shit.
You were born in the 80s.
I was.
So what you're saying is if you go in with low expectations, you can be pleasantly surprised. Like I think you were.
I don't know how to manage that, though, because I already talked about what a psychobabble I am.
But the movie. I went in hoping for a Freddie Mercury biopic, and I was disappointed. So I think the message of be careful with this is one to kind of behold. If you want to go see a Queen concert, you can.
So, Michael, when I drink this next gulp of my water, is mm-hmm. it half empty or half full?
I'm going to pour it on your laptop. Let's dance. Spoilers ahead!
This is a spoiler warning.
Spoilers. 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 Spoilers.
Mike, and Oscar Sprint, spoilers!
This is the spoiler section of Mike, and Oscar's Oscar Sprint Profile review of the movie Bohemian Rhapsody.
You just sang David Bowie's Let's Dance for 20 minutes here.
I did. Go on.
I'm very angry. It just sparked in my brain that they didn't have like a David Bowie impersonation played by Tilda Swinton this movie. That was just a layup. It was a layup.
You wanted
it went
Tilda
from 61% on Rotten Tomatoes to 81%.
The Tilda Swinton David Bowie performance in the Bohemian Rhapsody movie is what you were on.
Absolutely.
I see. All right. Very good.
She would have killed it. She would have crushed it.
That is not a spoiler, as that was not here, but these are all spoilers for Bohemian Rhapsody from here on out. If you have not seen the movie yet, this is where you want to hit pause. Go see it and then hit play to come back. If you do not care about what happens, if you have already seen the movie, if you do not care for us spoiling it, or if you want to hear our thoughts on it, it's all twists and turns, all spoilers for Bohemian Rhapsody. And this Oscar Sprint Profile brought to you by Mike, and Oscar from here on out. Michael, let's do some carryovers, and they're pretty much going to be all plot-based or plot-heavy.
Right, so I just want to open up with some script thoughts.
Sure.
Against, allude to possible best-worst scenes. There are some horrendous scenes in this movie.
Just unbearable.
Unfortunately, some of the worst of those scenes involve the romance and the family stuff. So, like, where the characters really have to interact.
Yeah.
It bothered me the most. And I would say, yes, some of the band interactions.
You're hitting
like
on
that too.
We're going to start with worst scenes because you're hitting on my worst scenes already. This gets love very wrong. I also thought this had such a chance to be both with Freddie Mercury himself, seen as such a pillar and an inspiration for anyone that suffered through AIDS or had lost a loved one to AIDS,
right.
Or Freddie Mercury and the Mary Austin love, how he was an institution and a pillar for homosexuality and being yourself and being comfortable being yourself and coming out. And they had the unrequited love that they couldn't extinguish, even though they were never really meant to be, or they couldn't be because they had different sexual interests. I thought there was a lot of land here, a lot of chance for this to kind of admonish or see them as the bright pillars, put the spotlight on those subjects and be more accepting of everyone and make everyone feel welcomed into this movie.
Yeah, it didn't work.
And treat them as the institutions, the statues, the tributes to these moments in time where these great people suffered through these indignities in a less understood and less politically correct time, and they still were able to be such successes, and it wasn't.
It's almost like they're flippant with the whole thing, because Freddie literally says at one point when he's on the most drugs, he's like, I still haven't figured out love yet, or something to that ilk. And that, to me, is what this plot suffers from the most. They don't know what love is. Baby, don't hurt them. And we have a major problem with that, not only on the romantic level, but also the friendship level is there too. Like this, I don't really get the relationships with him and the band. I get they get in there and they jam and they put together the music.
Yeah, and that's it. There's no personality, and it's almost like they're stuffing it down your throat. How many times we're a family, fight, and there's just no personal interaction outside of the studio.
Right.
And we talked about the shortcomings, and part of the problem with that is that there's no through line throughout this as far as relationships go, because this movie is set up. This is the scene where Freddie starts having problems with the band.
Yeah.
Okay, this is the scene where Freddie starts with the drug use and going to gay clubs. And it's like these scenes were set up. It's almost as if this was storyboarded and that was it. They storyboarded the highlight scenes and they didn't answer the and then.
Yeah, and there's just no... I feel like it's all elevated speech, or mostly elevated speech.
And on the nose.
And jokes. It's on the nose. It's horrifically on the nose. It's horrifically on the nose dialogue for many scenes that drove us insane. You just kept shuffling in your seat.
It was bad.
Every time I saw you, I was like, he heard it too.
It's true. I mean, it's unforgivable in a lot of ways. And then we talked about... we'll get back to that in a sec, but I just don't want to forget this point. We talked about romanticizing certain aspects of this, right? Which is what every biopic does. I get that. If you're going to twist the truth, and you have this guy who's a hero to so many people, and an icon in not only the music world, but in the performance world, pop culture, whatever you want to talk about, and you're going to create a myth that he was diagnosed with AIDS before this Live Aid concert... I just have such a problem with that because it's on
record.
Well,
I don't know if it's...
He wasn't diagnosed with AIDS until probably 2 years after life.
I don't know the true story.
Yeah, I mean, it's known. It's pretty well known. You didn't know. That's fine. It didn't affect you the same way. But it's just, to me, why use that? Why manipulate the thing about this guy's life that's so personal and was so... he lived it out. For the love of God, the show must go on. He made so many songs about being diagnosed with AIDS and knowing that his life was coming to an end. You had all that fertile ground. Yeah, at some point, but not before Live Aid. So in the movie...
he might have known symptoms, but he himself, Freddie Mercury, might have known symptoms
that
he was having before Live Aid.
Symptoms, sure, but I don't think he knew he had AIDS.
He might have known something was up. I don't know. I'm just
saying... My point is, they wanted to manipulate...
The band shouldn't have known, and the whole point was to have him and the band finally gel.
Right. The Live Aid concert was a reunion. It wasn't the, let's do this because Freddie's dying.
Right.
There's other stuff they did because Freddie was dying, which they did in public light, which could have been addressed and could have been used, if that's what you wanted to do.
Yeah, that doesn't make... They condensed that, and they composited that plot line into the Live Aid sequence. That's very much a screenwriting force.
Yeah. Absolutely. I just had a big problem with that.
I didn't know that. Yeah, I would have a major problem with that too. So, we said the dialogue is laughable in many scenes. The family scenes of him and his dad. Some of the he could have had the Dewey Cox father dialogue and I would have believed it.
There was one review I read. It was David Ehrlich's review for IndieWire, as a matter of fact. And the quote was so funny. He said, It's an out-of-body experience to watch such a paint-by-numbers portrait in a post-walk-hard world.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what... I couldn't believe how accurate and how encapsulating that one sentence is. Because this is like you just said, this is like watching Walk Hard, but presented without irony.
And we just seen last year, you have a multicultural family, and they were portrayed so well in The Big Sick. Again, you have an artist's son not doing what his parents want him to do.
Right.
And it's just so off the cuff and lived in. And here we have this elevated dialogue about the father just laying it down. You should have whatever this kind of job. And these are my values. Did I mention these are my core values?
Yeah, that's like his go-to. Say, I forget what it is. It's like nice actions, nice
good
talk.
Good actions, good talk, good deeds. And then the son in the last scene is like, oh, dad, by the way, good values. And that was the worst. And I don't so care bad. Because it was probably to a great, one of the hits. In a way, again, I forgive this movie because of what it delivers to me with the goods of it. And that being said, you want to get into some best thoughts?
I have two more worst scenes. Really do. I have two more worst scenes. One, you hit on because with the songs. The best use of the songs in this movie was when they were put over montages. Freddie discovering his sexuality, going to the gay clubs. Freddie, there was a couple montages. But they also used too many of the hit songs as solutions to conflict that came up within the same scene. Like, Another One Bites the Dust is the one that comes to mind so vividly because, okay, this is the scene where Freddie and the band start their fighting because Freddie showed up late and the band has put up with enough of it. They're sick. By the way, the band members are all painted as golden in this movie. Freddie's the only one with faults by and large.
Yeah, we just don't get to know the rest of the characters that well. But I Want to Break Free was literally a plot point where the character needed to break free.
I can't stand
of the band.
Yeah.
And the next scene, he breaks up with the band.
So it's they're treated as solutions to problems that are contrived and made. I hated that. And the second, my biggest problem, my second last thing I'll harp on here, the homosexuality, his coming out, to me, I think inadvertently, I don't think this was meant to be the point, but I think inadvertently it almost became the antagonist to Freddie Mercury in this film. And that is a huge mistake. His life starts that downward spiral as soon as he doesn't come out as gay. His fiance accuses him of being gay, not bisexual, and that starts a downward spiral for him. I think that's a huge problem because there's not really another personification of...
The career goes to another level. Like,
right, that's true too. There is more fame to deal with and stuff like that. But I, it's not invert. It's not on purpose. It's not meant to be that message.
But you're right.
I just think it plays that way to some. And some people
the
can
momentum
see it like
of the plot. Now
I have a problem. With
it. Yeah. Well, to gay kids and to gay people in the 80s, which was just like the Middle Ages for Christ's sake.
Yeah, no kidding. No.
It could. They how many people's Maybe lives were
right.
ruined?
Maybe it did
because of. Just that fact of who they were and society being medieval, like I said.
But I think my complaint is more so that there's not really an antagonist. There's no bad guy. There's one, the kind of the road manager, he's treated as like the manipulator. Yeah. But other than
Branson
that.
Branson from Downton Abbey.
Yeah, there's not really a.
I thought his performance was pretty good, by the way. I liked his performance.
He just shows up with guys in leather whips and chains and
no.
in a nighttime studio.
No, I thought he's doing a lot with his face there. He's having conflicting emotions in certain scenes. I mean, okay. It's his meal ticket, but he's also... I watched Downton Abbey. He can act,
all
man.
Right, that's fine. I wasn't crazy about him, but that's fine.
I thought he did a nice job. I will say that the scene in the rain wasn't terrible, Mike.
I agree. And we you're right. We weren't there. I don't know what is true and what was romanticized for the purpose of the movie. So I had those problems with it. And it just hit me the wrong way is what I'll say. And I think it's because a couple members of Queen were executive producers and we already heard how they wanted to be a little too involved previously. And they come off as
I don't
golden.
Know.
There is no faults for the three members of Queen.
That's true.
So that's my take. I think that's a problem. I think it affected the script.
That's true. I don't. Yeah, those are flat characters.
Right.
I don't see like what's.
I mean, even the conflict in the band is because of Freddie being late and Freddie partying too much.
Freddie breaking their balls.
The guy that's not alive anymore is the bad guy in those scenes.
Now, who knows? We don't know truth necessarily. Stories are told by whoever, you know, lives the longest in some of these cases. So,
and maybe it was maybe they needed to be executive producer to get the great soundtrack in, which is certainly one of the highs.
And it's still a tribute to Freddy. You have to give a character an arc in this. You have to have a round character with flaws, and that's why Rami Malek has some meat on the bone to play here, because he is caught in some elevated dialogue horse crap in a lot of this movie, where he's just supposed to say, yes, we're a legend. I mean, he could have totally just phoned this performance in, and he actually gives some nuances to these scenes. He plays it differently than you'd expect. I like, obviously, how he does the emotional scenes. We forgot performances before, but let's just say Rami Malek, in terms of range, when he's on stage, when he's off stage, quiet moments, loud moments, where he's putting on a show within the show for the crowd, when he's putting on a show within the show at or within the party, right? Yeah. A show performance within the party.
And I'm glad to hear you. I thought I was higher on Malek's performance than you were.
I just don't know if it is going to be like a top five of the year for me. I don't know that yet. I know he's not my number one right now.
He's not my number one either. I think that Live Aid performance at the end, the big finale, which is the highest of highs for me for this movie, I think that gets him nominated. Because his mannerisms on stage are remarkable.
Yeah, some of his, some of the more awkward shots, because there's a lot of repetitive shots in that sequence. I love the sequence. It's going to be one of my best scenes because there's the balls in writing that. Oh, okay, we're going to have the set.
The whole thing.
And the movie.
Amazing. Unexpected.
Love that.
You're already on this high. I guess we can get into it now, but we're already on this high from hearing the songs all throughout the movie. So the big lead up, the big crescendo, is this Live Aid concert that we all know is very famous. They did in 85. And we get the entire Live Aid set from Queen, performed by Rami Malek.
And that's awesome.
Well done.
And again, it's very unexpected. Nope. Now, it's also, totally. I wonder if it's the whole set, because they didn't play the same songs that they've been playing the hits throughout the movie. They played new songs with the exception of the beginning of Bohemian Rhapsody. So I like that fact. They were not redundant musically. But I think they realized where their bread is buttered, how they knew they were going to have a hit here. Let's play the hits. I think that's what this movie was more a vehicle to do, because of this sequence drives it home for me. Even still, I wonder if you could have made a movie work with that final sequence without preceding it with, oh, well, he has to, you know,
that's
make,
my frustration.
Make amends.
You could have. I think you could have.
Oh, by the way, the ex-wife, she visits him at the trailer.
Paint
oh, by
numbers.
The way, this random guy that he has
one scene,
conversation with.
Becomes his lifelong lover, and he brings him to Live Aid.
I mean, that really happened, where he had a guy.
Right. Yeah, the guy was a real guy, yeah.
With him at the end of his life.
Yeah.
And he had another chance at love. And great.
Yeah.
We dedicated one scene where the guy basically asked one question, you know, when you start loving yourself. Now, that's a pointed question.
Yeah.
It's a question that could, it's more than just the silly 1920s movie. Well,
you could have had a
conversation
whole movie about that, though.
Yeah.
And leading up to that, even if you wanted to romanticize that end of it, that finale, that could have been done. That could have been your movie. But that's the Freddie Mercury biopic.
Yeah, it's like, that's a story that I want to see.
You know who's not in the Freddie Mercury biopic, though, Mike?
Right.
A lot of Queen isn't in the Freddie Mercury biopic.
But if you're going to have the band Queen in this story, don't you have to give them a story? We don't give them a story either. I mean, essentially, Freddie is a superstar.
No, what we don't give them is faults.
But they don't have a story. What's their arc, Michael?
They wrote the songs. They accepted Freddie back.
Yeah, but that's not an arc. That's not a solving a problem.
That could be an arc to someone who
that's
doesn't make...
That's not a solving of a problem.
That could be an arc to someone who doesn't make movies. I'm saying, if you're going to give them power for executive producer and creative control over their own characters...
It's a lack of an arc is what I'm saying.
I agree. Yeah. Cinematically, you're absolutely right. But... if I've made my life and I've made millions of dollars off of being in this band, and you want to do the biopic of my dead lead singer and I was just the backup, I'm going to make sure I have a little control over what I'm portrayed as.
The crisis of this movie is Freddie dealing with Tom Branson character, the manager boyfriend, and basically kicking him out. You're out. After, of course, she just shows up at his doorstep, the ex-wife. Fine. That's not a bad scene. Rami Malek acts the shit out of it.
Mm-hmm.
Then you have, that's a crisis. Then you have the act two climax, where basically he asks the band to let him back.
Can I come back? Yeah.
Can you forgive me? They, of course, you know, let him twist in the wind for, you know, 30 seconds there, and then they forgive him. That's the band's arc. Like, the band makes great music. They all have their little thing. And then at the end of the movie is they're all great on stage, and we recognize what this band meant to people.
And how long does the Freddie Mercury Leaves Queen arc, mini arc, go? 10 minutes?
No, it's longer than that. But
you think
right.
so?
I don't know. It might have been 20 minutes, but I think it's the second half of Act Two, so it had to go to around that. If you're looking at
134-minute movie,
15-20 minutes there. So yeah, this is such a dark period, Dewey
right.
Cox.
Right? Exactly. It becomes a parody of itself. You'd like to try me some of that cocaine?
Yeah. Good God.
You don't want none of this shit, Dewey.
And then it's just like, oh, by the way, let me pack some more emotion on the finale of this movie because I'm dying. And now you know I'm dying. Oh, let's go to the pub.
Yeah.
And they don't even show them going to the pub and actually having a good scene. It's just like them. Whatever.
There is no personal connection between any members of that band.
It's true.
At least that we
see. The problem here is mostly with story than performances. If you're going to listen to the greatest hits Queen album, you know, surround sound.
Yeah, it sounds wonderful. The songs are wonderful. And I will say Remy Malek's performance, if you want to call him one of the top five performances of the year, right now for me, he's in my top five. If you want to give him an Oscar nom, I'm not going to begrudge you. I don't know. You may feel differently.
I think there's a lot more to his performance. So, I mean, I'm looking at this as more, it's much more his story than the other guys.
I don't disagree.
And here's where I agree with you in terms of, all right, it's not the Freddie, but they give away the story to the band at the end of Act
they
Two.
They have the crucial decision, too, at the end.
Bring him back.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, yes, he makes a decision leading into that, will you forgive me? But that was
and Freddie's the
it's
asshole
a freaking
that leaves.
No-brainer.
They have nothing to do with him leaving.
It's a no-brainer. It's not.
I think it was fumbled a little bit, and I think it had... I think to get the rights to the song and to treat the songs with the respect they are, I think there was some fumbling. I also would love to, like I said in the non-spoiler section, I would love to know what was Dexter Fletcher and what was Bryan Singer.
Well, here's another screenwriting principle, by the way, folks, and this just dawned on me. All right, you have your Act Two climax, all right? You're supposed to have a dilemma leading into that. What the hell is the dilemma right now when you have... basically everybody telling Freddie Mercury, oh, by the way, we have the biggest concert in the history of the world, and you're a fucking asshole if you're not a part of it, and you're gonna make so much money and you're gonna do it for a great cause, and you're gonna basically be able to win the affection of your father back, and you're gonna have all your friends back together, or you don't do it and you stay alone and you're ostracized.
That's it.
A dilemma between great heaven and hell. It's a dilemma between, you know, a great scenario and a terrible scenario. That's a terrible dilemma. That's not a dilemma.
Now contrast that dilemma that Freddie Mercury is given to the dilemma that the Queen band has, where they have to decide.
Same thing.
Well, they have to decide whether or not to accept this guy back.
We can forgive this guy and be a part of the greatest concert of all time and make hundreds of millions of dollars again together, or we can just keep going and live out, you know, whatever. It's just like great scenario, terrible scenario. That's not a dilemma. Irreconcilable goods, worse or the better of two evils. That's a dilemma. You're choosing between two things that are hard to choose from.
You're right. I like Rami Malek's performance is where I will end my review of Bohemian Rhapsody.
And I like the songs a lot.
Be careful with this. Be careful with this movie.
It's loaded. And let us know what you think. You know, we're digesting this movie one time. This is one of those movies that we're doing the same weekend. For our next couple reviews, we're going to watch them a few times. Like Suspiria, I'm planning to go the next few days. Then we're going to get you out a well-researched review. Kindergarten Teacher, we're going to do eventually. Beautiful Boy, those kind of movies we're going to see a couple times. We're going to have more of an in-depth breakdown. Today we're a little scattershot, you know, admittedly.
We'll jump into grades real quick. We actually forgot to do this, so I'm actually doing it alone in a post-edit section here or while we're editing, so you're not going to hear Mike. But also Mike gave me his grade to read out loud. He gives it an 83-84, so it's right on that B-. B edge and true to form, true to our usual 3-point differentiation, I guess, that we usually do. I'm a little lower on it. I gave it a hard 80. It's right on that C+, B- line. I tend to lean more C+ than B-, as you could probably guess from listening to this review. But just, like I said, just be careful with this movie if you're going to see it. Just tread carefully with what you should expect or what you will expect to see. Yeah, guys, like Mike said, we want to hear from you. Were you a big fan? Hey, look, it's got great audience numbers. IMDb and the audience score on Rotten Tomato are huge. Are you one of those voters? Did you like it? Are we missing something, or are we, are lows too low, or are highs too high? We want to hear from you either way. Let us know. Mike and Oscar on Facebook, Mike and Oscar on Instagram, MM and Oscar on the Twitter machine, Mike and Oscar at gmail.com, and on Reddit. We are everywhere. I just threw us up somewhere new for our podcast to be heard. I don't even know where, but if you listen to podcasts and we're not there, let us know. We'll be there soon. We are basically everywhere you hear a podcast. And on this day, Michael, Bohemian Rhapsody now in the rear view, the best actor race taking one more form. We are in November, 2 months left of 2018.
So many Oscar movies coming up, folks, but for words of wisdom, I think we have to revisit Fat Bottom Girls, because I was hearing some lyrics today driving to the theater. They were like, you know, almost Sir Mix-a-Lot, like celebrating big butts.
I will always celebrate big butts.
And we do. And we love to. So we were hard on it in our last Queen Songs and Movies episode, yeah. The Queen Filmography, which I really liked. Hopefully you guys liked it too. We're harder on that song. Maybe we shouldn't be. It's your favorite song. You're not as bad of a person as I assume you could be.
I refuse to accept that.
That's the wisdom that I have to drop.
How dare you?
You're not as bad as you think you are.
All right, guys, we'll check you out next time. Thanks for listening.
See ya.